Imagine Paris, the beautiful city of lights, completely destroyed by explosives. This unthinkable scenario came close to happening in August 1944 when Hitler gave orders that German troops should destroy Paris before the Allied forces arrived. Volker Schlondorf's latest film, Diplomacy, reimagines an all-night confrontation between the German general assigned to carry out Hitler's orders and a Swedish diplomat who tried to dissuade him. Mr. Schlondorf is an internationally renowned director whose 1979 film, The Tindrum, won the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. Diplomacy opens tomorrow at Film Forum. I'm very pleased that it brings Volker Schlondorf back to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Tell us briefly about what was happening in Paris in August 1944. As the Allies marched toward the city, what plans were the Germans making?
They knew they could not defend the city. Actually, it didn't have any much strategic value. But for Hitler, it had a sentimental value. And he didn't trust any of his generals anymore because just a month before they had tried to attempt to his life. So he took a general from the Russian front who was really thought he could count on him, Dietrich von Koltitz. And he sent him to Paris on August 5th, and he said, "You got to blow up the city. I don't want Paris to stay intact when Berlin is destroyed." It was a completely senseless, irrational, and yet, if you put yourself in the mind of a fool, understandable.
A madman. Where were the explosives planted?
Well, it went, first of all, 32 bridges were mined with dynamite. They used torpedoes on the legs of the Eiffel Tower and so on.
And the bridges would be blown up because then the Seine would...
Well, it was collateral damage of blowing up the bridges. They imagined that the river would be blocked, the bridges, the debris would act like dams, and the city, the inner city, the Marais, which means swamp, would be inundated as it had been in 1910 when there was a big inundation. And so the river would do the work for them and have the buildings tremble.
Your film features a battle of wits between two highly contrasting characters, Dietrich von Choltitz, you mentioned, the German military governor, and the Swedish diplomat Raoul Nordling. Were they real people? I mean,
absolutely real.
And did they ever meet in these kinds of conversations?
Oh yeah, they met a few. This nightly encounter is, let's put it that way, is fiction, which a young French playwright actually, after 9/11, imagined. He thought, well, if it is possible today in New York City, then, of course, it could have happened in Paris. And he went back to that story. And the interesting thing is that the real person, this German general, was far from being a cultivated art lover or so. He was a hard-boiled infantry general. He never visited Paris. He said, "I'm not here for tourism. I'm here for war." And so Paris was saved by a villain, so to speak. That makes it more interesting.
Well, he was the descendant of a long line of Prussian soldiers who respected discipline, was loyal to Hitler. And then we learn he has more personal reasons to obey the order. I don't want to reveal everything. But we feel a little sympathy for him.
Well, I hope not compassion, really. I mean, human sympathy, everybody deserves.
Well, he has a dilemma. He does understand.
Well, he does have a dilemma because his family is at stake. Or let's put it that way, his real dilemma is there is only one value in his family, and that is the honor of the family. And he doesn't quite understand whether the honor of the family will be more damaged if he blows up Paris or if he disobeys, as a general, his higher commander.
And then Raoul Nordling was acting as a diplomat, kind of, but weren't his motives also more personal?
Well, he was born in Paris, grew up in Paris. He loved the city. That's understandable, but also he loved the people in the city. He had more of a long-term vision. He thought, well, this war ultimately is going to end. What's going to happen then? So it's a role model of the diplomat. Diplomats in former times were used either to prevent wars from happening or once they started to end them. And my last role model was Richard Holbrooke, who ended a war in Bosnia. By diplomatic means and by dealing with Milosevic. And I thought the same battle of wills took place here between the general and the Swedish consul.
Although Sweden was officially neutral, so on one level he might have been overstepping his authority.
He acted on his own, this consul. He was not absolutely, Sweden did not want to interfere.
My guess is Volker Schlondorf, whose latest film is, or latest film to be released here. Is there a film after this? Because you
No. Just the next one has to be done.
This one is called Diplomacy, and it opens at the Film Forum tomorrow. You have this incredible cast. The two lead actors, Niels Aarestrup and André Dussolier, are just two of the greatest actors in their countries.
Yes,
but
they are.
But they're reprising roles that they performed in the original play.
Yeah, I never saw the play. The play was sent to me years later, and I read it and started to write a screenplay based on it. But then I was curious, of course, to meet the actors. And the French producers told me, of course, for the German general, you would like to have a German actor. And then I met Niels Aarestrup, whom I've seen in many French films, in Audiard's The Prophet, above all, where he was doing a gangster boss, Corsica. And I was so impressed by him, and I thought, wouldn't it be much more interesting if a Frenchman was doing a German general? You know, we avoid
a
number
accent.
Of clichés, of course. Well, he spoke a little German because his father, Aarestrup, is Danish. And so he could memorize, at least phonetically, the number of German lines he had to say.
The last time you were on the show, you just completed a documentary about Billy Wilder, who'd advised you always to make movies based on plays since the construction is already there.
And I can here confirm he was right.
Because you've done an awful lot of films that were adaptations of novels, often novels that are considered unfilmable.
No, I must say it was a pleasure to have a structure from this play, and then you can add to it. That's also what Billy Wilder had told me, you know. And
because you can open it up.
Yeah, you can open it up, not too much, because you don't want to lose what makes the play work. But, of course, we go out to the streets in Paris from time to time. But you can add to the characters. You can do so much more in a movie in close-ups than you can do on stage.
Did you change the play all that much?
No, basically it's the same. I don't know in percentage. Is it 70% or 80%? Anyhow, you take off a lot because people always talk too much when you start from a play. And on the other hand, well, you add secondary characters. You can do this. I mean, this all happened at the Hotel Meurice, the most elegant Paris hotel. And that is this other thing, you know, War and Peace is all decided in such elegant and wonderful, luxurious circumstances. So the whole hotel plays its part, the concierge, the roommates, the corridors, and that's what you can do in a movie. It's like a Titanic sinking.
Well, it must have been a lot easier than adapting Günter Grass's Tin Drum, Proust's Swan in Lake, Swans in Love, The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. Those
I had done plays before. You know, I've done The Death of a Salesman with Malkovich and Dustin Hoffman, which I rendered as a play on purpose. And this time I really felt the opportunity was to turn the play almost into an epic.
It's paced like a thriller. Is the problem how to build suspense when we already know the outcome?
Well, that was the biggest surprise for me, that indeed it is breathtaking. And then something I did not count on is that emotion is building up, because everyone, whether the French, where the film was enormously popular, or any other audience, all of a sudden the idea, my God, the city could have been blown up. And when it, we see the picture in a theater in Paris, and then you walk out and you see the city there at the horizon, and you appreciate it even more. So there is, in an unexpected way, it became a very emotional film.
Well, you open the film with a montage of archive footage of bombed out German cities.
No, that's Warsaw. Warsaw, which was razed, literally razed, in the first week of August, so 3 weeks prior. So it shows.
So Hitler had wanted Warsaw really, to go, and now he wanted Paris.
He wanted Paris. I mean, these things were done, and that is, you know, seems so incredible to us, and yet it does happen. If ISIS was in command.
France and Germany today have a pretty good working relationship. Would that have been possible if Paris had been destroyed?
Look, I came to Paris at age 16, 10 years after the war, to learn French. I think I would never have been sent there. I would probably not have learned French, would not be a filmmaker, wouldn't be doing an interview now here. So I feel very personally affected by this story. There could have been no reconciliation between de Gaulle and Adenauer, and there probably wouldn't be an economic union now. On the other hand, the fact that today, economically, Germany is so much dominating Europe reminds the French, of course, of that period of 5 years when they were under German occupation. And the Germans and the politicians are not always aware that the memory of people is very long, and this now economic supremacy is not well lived by other nations.
Of course, Germany and France had previous problems, the Prussian War, then World War I, and in all cases, France wound up being kind of defeated by the Germans.
Well, ultimately, victories.
Did von Choltitz and Nordling survive the war?
Yes, they did, and they met once again in 1956, when the consul actually gave the medal the French had rewarded him to the general, as if he was the one who owed it. Now, the French could not give a general nor even name a street after the German general who saved the city, because this German general had done such terrible things in the years before in Crimea, in Ukraine, and were not including execution of thousands of Jews and destroying cities such as Rotterdam.
And he says in the film that he doesn't feel any guilt for that.
Yeah, he is this typical horrible military who thinks for the cause of obedience you can follow every order.
Now, many Americans will think they know the story because they saw the 1966 movie by René Clément called Is Paris Burning, which had an all-star cast, including Orson Welles as Raoul Nordling.
Right.
Is that story any closer to the real events than yours, or vice versa?
Not necessarily. I mean, the events are the same. It's just that the perspective is different, and we go more in-depth in one of these episodes, just trying to see why didn't Paris burn. And to this point, it's a mostly psychological question, so it makes for good drama.
Because you have these two evenly matched men, each argument is met by a rather good counter-argument.
Yeah. Well, it's we try to understand how history works, and sometimes you need fiction to understand better facts.
And you say this is already hit in France?
Yeah, we had, 500,000 spectators, so that is my biggest commercial success in the last 25 years. And it's opening now around the world.
Including Germany, I assume.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Volker Schlondorf will be appearing for Q&As at the Film Forum both tomorrow and Thursday following the 7 o'clock screenings of his film called Diplomacy, which stars two of the greatest actors of France, Niels Aristrup and André Desolières. And it has been my great pleasure to have Mr. Schlondorf on our show again today as a guest.
Thank you so much for having me.